Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
So, Peter Welch, what about this opposition to the EU, the European Union, efforts to bar U.S. cheese producers from using geographic names? I confess, I have no idea what that's all about. What is that?
Well, basically, it is the European Union trying to stiff our farmers and not let them sell cheeses that have a common name like cheddar, claiming that they have an origin in a location in France, let's say. So it's brutal, because if this were part of the trade agreement, it would mean that farmers here who make cheddar, like Cabot cheddar, wouldn't be able to export that under that name to Europe. But it also would mean they wouldn't even be able to sell domestically in Vermont under the name of cheddar. So it's just, it's doomed. That we cannot allow that to happen.
Well, why are they doing it? I don't get it.
Well, they're doing it for trade advantage. They're trying to claim that they invented cheddar, in effect. You know, so it's like champagnes. There are locations where, in order to use a name, it has to be from that region. And there's something about the soils, and there's something about the history of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you take that too far, and you basically apply it to a generic-type name like cheddar, where we've been producing it for generations, then you're going overboard, and you're using the excuse of a so-called geographic indicator basically as a market barrier. And the Europeans are driving a hard bargain on this use of geographic indicators, and it's essentially a way of trying to protect them at the their farmers at the expense of our farmers.
Well, we're not going to agree to this, are we?
We sure should not. I mean, that's why I'm circulating this letter, and we're letting our trade representatives know that that's a non-starter. I mean, I think that there'd be enormous and legitimate furor if our trade negotiators came back with an agreement that, in effect, put handcuffs on our cheesemakers from doing what they've been doing for generations. But it's a serious effort on the part of the European Union. I mean, this is what they claim. They claim that they're the origin of all good cheese, in a way.
But we have a lot. We sell a lot of cheese in the United States, and cheese is huge.
Cheese is a growing part of the market. Cheese, yogurt, I mean, it's part of the ag industry that's so tremendous. And, of course, in Vermont, we've got some artisan cheesemakers who have been creating jobs and making lots of tummies pretty happy.
What does that mean, artisan? I'm sorry, Peter. What does that mean, artisan cheesemakers?
You know, it's specialty cheesemakers.
I see.
That's what they do, like an artisan craftsperson.
Sure.
We've got a lot of cheesemakers throughout Vermont, and they are small operations, but they produce a lot of cheese, and it's a growing part of the agricultural economy in Vermont. It's like, you know, there are these in New York, of course, you've got that tremendous yogurt company.
Indeed.
That has become so successful. So we've got to make sure that our farmers, including our small farmers, some of the folks, young people who decide, hey, we want to learn how to make the best cheese possible. If they're making cheddar cheese or a feta cheese, they're not going to be hamstrung by the trade agreement.
Do you like cheese?
I love cheese.
Really?
Yeah, I love it.
Huh. That's amazing. Doesn't it stink a little bit?
Cheese is just, you know, Alan, I've always been impressed by you until now.
I see.
Cheese is great.
No, cheese is great. I got it. Do you like a melted cheese sandwich, Congressman?
I do.
Well, it's coming. It's the coming thing now. In Great Barrington, Massachusetts, people are talking about melted cheese sandwiches. So that's good. So let's stay on agriculture for a minute, and let's talk about the FDA rule that would prevent breweries from giving spent grains to farmers. Aren't we having fun today? This is really stuff that I had never thought about. What's that all about?
Well, you know, our farmers and our brewers have a great relationship. We've got breweries in Vermont. The craft beer is really tremendous. And I was at Heady Topper, which is one of the top craft beers in the country. And they were telling me that the spent grain, that's the grain they use, the barley that they use for brewing the beer, they give to a local farmer. And the farmer feeds it to his cattle. And the cattle love it. It's yum, yum, yum for the cattle.
Do they get drunk or no?
They like Heady Topper. They like Eddie Topper barley. But I think they do not get drunk. But they
could
they
sit down there in their tummies and ferment, you know.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we're kidding around about it, but you know, the FDA basically was saying you got to stop doing that, and they proposed a rule which would require the Hetty Topper and other brewers to take that spent grain, heat it, dry it, pack it, and take it to the landfill, as opposed to give it away free.
And what's their rationale for that, Congressman?
You know, who knows? Who knows? But there's been a firestorm in Congress about it.
Well, they've got to have a rationale. They've got to see.
Yeah, but actually, you know, they didn't give us the rationale. They put this out as a proposed rule. So presumably there's somebody somewhere in the FDA that says there's some health issue that may or may come up. And the problem with that theory is that this has been a practice since George and Martha Washington. You know, they would make whiskey at Mount Vernon.
Yeah.
And they took the spent grain from that process and fed it to their very happy pigs. So this has been a symbiotic relationship that is obviously efficient. It's cost-effective for the brewers. It's wonderful for the farmers. Because if they don't get that spent grain, they have to pay like $450 a ton to provide feed as a substitute. So this is tremendous for our farmers and our brewers. And, you know, the point I made when we were up at Hetty Topper was that, hey, if this process was good enough for George and Martha Washington, then it's good enough for John and Jen Chemish, who are the Hetty Topper brewers.
Whoa. It's enough to make you into a libertarian, all these rules, isn't it?
Well, you know, there's a place for rules, but there's no place for stupid rules. And this is an example of just a crackpot idea, and we've got to make certain that it doesn't see the light of day.
Okay, so Peter, how do you personally, you know, Congressman Extraordinaire, how do you get in the faces of these people and say, cut it out?
Well, we've done it. The first thing we did is we got a letter signed by a lot of my colleagues, and we sent it to the FDA, and we said, hey, this is nuts. And it's had an effect.
Did they write back?
They actually went on their website, and they acknowledged that they've been receiving enormous amount of pushback and gave some indication on a blog post that they're going to back down. Now, that's a blog post, and we haven't seen them withdraw the proposed rule yet, so we're staying on it. But I think it's promising. And it's one of those things where, I mean, how in the world would they be able to sustain this and justify it? It would be enormous expense for the farmers and an enormous expense for the brewers if you did this.
So have you ever seen hops grown?
I have. I mean, from a distance.
There's some people who are growing it in Great Barrington on the way into town.
That's right.
It's very interesting about these poles and these sort of lines that come down from the poles. I don't fully understand the whole thing.
Well, it is quite a process. In fact, a friend of mine who does his own beer brewing has hops on what is essentially a trellis on the side of his house and on the side of his garage. And they've got a pergola there, and they're really quite beautiful.
Wow. But I wanted to talk to about LIHEAP funding. What's that?
Well, that's the heating assistance for low-income Vermonters and, of course, low-income folks around the country. And we've passed through the really cold season, but what we've seen is the federal government has been cutting LIHEAP funding by about 30% over the past several years. And the cost of home heating fuel has gone up, not down. And the winters have gotten longer and colder.
Is there any indication that people are freezing?
Oh, it's enormous pressure on people. Yeah, and they're cold. And we had lots of stories in Vermont about really people having to make very tough decisions about medication or home heating fuel. And this heating assistance has been a real lifeline. And Vermont has stepped up because federal funding has gone down and the state has stepped in and provided supplemental funding. But, you know, this is a burden that the states can't bear alone. We can't just have the federal government abandon its responsibility here.
So how do we get around this?
It's in this tough budget environment.
Yes.
It's really, really hard because there's a view among many of my colleagues that, hey, you're on your own. You know, turn down the thermostat. It's your problem. You know, I think if we were smart about this, we'd be doing a couple of things. One, we'd increase weatherization. And we do that because if you actually reduce the need for fuel, that's going to save money on the need for fuel assistance. But it's also going to put people to work in the weatherization program. And
sure,
it's going to cut down on carbon emissions. So I'd like to see us really support all things that improve energy efficiency, but the weatherization program is one that I think is really beneficial for the taxpayer as well.
Peter Welch, we love having you with us, and we'll be back real soon.
Great.